Thank you. So I work with Food and Water Watch, which is a national consumer advocacy organization. I am based out of the California office, and I'm going to be speaking today about the groundwater and public health impacts from concentrated dairy production in the Central Valley of California. That's me, and I have no relationship to disclose. I'm going to start first by talking about how it was that California came to be such a dairy powerhouse, and I'm then going to talk a little bit about the regulations governing groundwater pollution from dairies, and I can give you the punchline from that right now. It's very weak. So I'm then going to talk about what these weak regulations have meant for public health and groundwater quality, using data that we compiled through a literature review and a series of Public Record Act requests. I'm going to try then to make some conclusions about the impact of some new regulations that came online in 2007. And finally, I'm going to close with some recommendations to improve groundwater quality and public health in dairy-producing areas of the Central Valley. So California is actually the number one dairy-producing state in the country. It produces about 22% of all U.S. milk, but it wasn't always like that. You can see from this line graph that since 1980, the number of dairy cows in California has doubled to 1.8 million cows. That only includes mature producing dairy cows, so if you also factor in young cows, it's actually double that number. So we have 4 million cows living in California, the vast majority of them in the Central Valley. We've seen an increase in the number of cows because we've also seen an increase in the number of very large dairies in the state. This graph shows a decline of 60% in small and mid-sized dairies in California just since 1992. At the same time, we've seen a 32% increase in the number of large dairies. This is a picture from EPA Region 9 of dairy production in the Central Valley. The red dots represent operations that house between 3,500 and 7,000 cows each. The pink dots represent operations housing more than 7,000 cows. I think it's important to point out that the EPA nationally considers any dairy with more than 700 cows to be a large CAFO, or concentrated animal feeding operation, that's subject to special water quality rules because it's such a risk. So we're talking here about dairies that are 10 times that size or more, clustered in one area. When you have this many cows, they're producing often more waste than the land can absorb, and so you do see groundwater quality impacts from that. The dairies in the valley, according to an estimate from the GAO, produce about 8 times the amount of waste of the city of Los Angeles, the human population, every single year. The shift towards larger dairies is a trend that we've seen across the country, and I think it's interesting to look at some of the factors that have driven dairies to be this big if we're interested in trying to figure out how to address the public health impacts of that growth. So one major factor that's driving dairy growth has been the consolidation of the buying companies for milk. So one example would be in California, there's a handler called California Dairies Inc., which is the company that goes around to all the dairies and buys the milk directly from the producers. They actually, at this point, because they've absorbed several other handlers, buy about 50% of California's milk. And they're interested in buying from large dairies that can supply them with a sufficient volume of milk. They don't want to go to a lot of small dairies. In many areas, including the valley, they are the only buyer. And so if you can't access them, then you go out of business. Another example is nationally, Dean Foods is the largest processor and distributor of milk. They distribute about 40% of all milk in the U.S. under 50 different brand names. Probably most of the milk you see in the grocery store is owned by Dean, even though it doesn't say it on the label. And so, again, you see this pressure for dairies to, as they say, get big or get out in order to access the markets of these large buyers. And if you're a small dairy and you can't get the contract, then you don't have another option. At the same time, we've seen an end or a dismantling to federal policies that have helped in the past to control the volume of milk that's being produced, and that also set a minimum price that tried to give dairy producers a fair price for their milk, sort of like a living wage. These policies were dismantled in the 1980s. We saw volume skyrocket and prices fall, and many smaller dairies went out of business at that point. So taking all of this together, in California and elsewhere in the country, we have much larger dairies producing a lot more milk and a lot more waste. All this waste has water quality and public health impacts, but state regulations in California have really lagged behind the growth of dairies in the last few decades. In California, dairy waste discharge is governed by regional water quality control boards. Up until 2007, the Central Valley Water Board actually waived the state requirement that dairies operate under a waste discharge permit. And that waiver was in place until new regulations were put in 2007. So effectively, groundwater pollution from dairies in the valley was essentially unregulated until 2007 because federal water quality laws don't usually cover groundwater. Pressure from Central Valley communities, environmental groups, and others led the legislature in 2005 to tell the board they needed to stop with this waiver and implement new regulations. And so those were put into place in 2007. And it was a general waste discharge permit that covers all of the dairies in the valley. It's called the General Order. And what it requires is that dairies develop management plans that help them manage their waste in order to better protect groundwater. It requires them to test surface water discharge and private wells on their property, the wells they use for drinking or for irrigation, for nitrates and salts every year. And then over time, the General Order envisioned implementing a phased groundwater monitoring program where every dairy eventually would have to install a series of groundwater monitoring wells on their property that were engineer certified that could then return some data about how well the regulations were working. So this is a huge improvement over past years. There's no question about that. That led us to ask a couple research questions. The first is, what can we say about the state of groundwater before dairies were regulated? And then looking at the new regulations, are they protective as written? Are they being implemented and enforced by the Water Board? And then finally, can we tell if any beneficial changes have taken place in the 3 years since the regulations have been implemented? And these are all really important public health questions. 90% of communities in the Central Valley rely on groundwater as their drinking water source. And there's a lot of families that use domestic supply wells that they may not be testing as frequently as they should. So what can we say about how dairies impacted groundwater during this period of weak regulation? California has no comprehensive state groundwater monitoring program, which is a big problem. But there has been significant research done on nitrate contamination of groundwater in the valley, and it's clear that the valley has a nitrate problem. This photo is actually water samples taken from a bunch of communities in Tulare County, California, where there are a lot of dairies as well as a lot of irrigated cropland. And they have some significant problems to the point where many of the communities can't actually drink their water. Central Valley has more nitrate contaminated public drinking water wells than anywhere else in the state. But nitrates can come not just from dairies, but also from crop agriculture and from leaking septic systems and other sources. So we then looked at research that ties nitrate groundwater loading specifically to Central Valley dairies. And the research showed that they have been having an effect. The average lactating dairy cow excretes about 460 grams of nitrogen every day in its waste. And nitrogen is highly water soluble. It can travel easily from the soil into groundwater. This is just a couple of the studies that we looked at, one at UC Davis that sampled a number of dairies in the valley with monitoring wells down gradient or downstream, if you will, from the dairy, found that the average nitrate levels there were over 70 milligrams per liter, which is 7 times the drinking water standard. A 2002 study also through UC Davis found average nitrate levels in monitoring wells on dairies of 64 milligrams per liter. Up gradient or upstream of the dairies, the levels averaged 24 milligrams per liter, which is still above the standard, but is significantly less than after the water had passed underneath the dairy. We did a Public Records Act request of data that the board collected from dairies between 2000 and 2007. They sampled 54 dairies during that time. And the data that we collected from them and analyzed found that 91% of sampled dairies had nitrate levels in their groundwater above the drinking water standard. Half of them had levels at least 5 times the standard, and 15% had levels over 10 times the standard. Our research also looked at several other contaminants that are present in dairy waste and have been found to migrate into groundwater. These include salts, pathogens such as E. coli, antibiotics, which are frequently used on dairies, and hormones, both naturally occurring in the cows and also injected hormones like RBST. Due to time constraints, I can't cover the contaminants, but I will say that the research that we analyzed did show that there is the potential for it to migrate to groundwater, and it's been found in groundwater around dairies. So any true assessment of the public health impacts of this waste should include these constituents as well. Oh, this is my antibiotic billboard photo. The creation of new regulations governing dairy waste in the Valley in 2007, the General Order, provided a lot of new data because it required all dairies to submit tests for nitrate from their domestic on-site wells, so the wells that they use for drinking or for irrigation. 1,412 dairies submitted data in 2007. We received that through a Public Records Act request. And this bar graph shows the analysis of that data. This is the highest nitrate level recorded from each of the 1,412 dairies. And we found 60% of them reported at least one well with nitrate levels over the drinking water standard. 40% of them, or 550 dairies, had nitrate levels at least twice the drinking water standard in their wells. And nearly 12% actually reported concentrations over 40 milligrams per liter, or four times the standard. Now, this is not perfect data. It's taken from domestic supply wells, not engineer-certified monitoring wells. They usually sampled the wells only once or twice, and they were doing the sampling, although a certified lab did the analysis. So it's certainly not something that is robust enough to make firm conclusions, but it does give us a sense that there is a problem. The same data revealed that the pollution from dairies may be posing a significant risk to private household wells in the valley. 85% of dairies reported that they were located within 300 feet of an off-site domestic well, so someone else's drinking source was within 300 feet of 85% of these dairies. So that then brought us to ask, are the new regulations sufficient? Are they going to change this? Will they prevent groundwater quality degradation? They're an improvement, certainly, but our analysis showed that there are loopholes and weaknesses in the regulation that we and other analysts feel could potentially allow pollution to continue to occur. In fact, there's actually a lawsuit pending against the board at this point, brought by an organization in the valley to this effect. Can we tell if degradation is continuing? The only way we can really tell is if a comprehensive monitoring program is implemented, but that is not happening. I mentioned that part of the General Order was a requirement that eventually all dairies would have to install an engineer-certified monitoring well and test it annually. To date, that program has not been implemented 3 years into the regulation. The industry is now saying it's too expensive and is pressuring the board to change the requirement to be instead a regional monitoring program where only certain dairies would be monitored and the program would actually be administered by the dairy industry, not by the board. Unfortunately, it looks like the board may approve this proposal by the end of this year. And can we track the sources of pollution without a monitoring program? We certainly can't, and a regional monitoring program is going to make that difficult as well. We found that the effectiveness of the General Order was further weakened by a lack of enforcement. Our review of files showed that dairies frequently submit incomplete paperwork in response to the General Order requirements. They often refuse to comply with certain portions of it. Existing law clearly stipulates that non-compliant operations are to be held civilly liable, but our review of the records showed that the board almost never fines dairies for non-compliance. The trend is that they'll issue a notice of violation when dairies are out of compliance, but they are never followed up on. One particularly egregious example is White River Dairy in the Central Valley. The first letter we found in the file from a nearby resident claiming that this dairy was discharging waste directly into the White River was from 1983. There were inspections every 3 to 4 years after that point, which would be followed by a notice of violation to the dairy saying, yes, you are discharging into the river and you need to stop. The dairy did not stop. There was never a fine levied, and the most recent notice of violation for this exact same problem was August 2010. So our conclusion was that although the General Order is certainly an improvement over the waiver, there are serious deficiencies and it's not being enforced. And I think that that's partly due to a lack of resources on the part of the Regional Water Board. They do not have enough money or staff to do their jobs. It was estimated that they would need 70 staff to implement the program. They have 10. I think it's also, though, due to a lack of political will. The board is appointed by the governor. It's not elected. And the dischargers, including the dairies and crop agriculture, as well as other industries that are discharging, have significant political power in the state. So the voices of the communities that are affected, which are largely low-income communities and communities of color, are often drowned out by industry. The chair of the Central Valley Water Board is actually married to someone who runs a company that is regulated by the same board as a discharger, which is a clear conflict of interest. And although a lawsuit has been filed, nothing has happened with that. So our final question is, are the regulations having any effect? This is a picture of one of the groups that's organizing some of the communities in the Central Valley to protect their drinking water. Unfortunately, the answer is we don't know if the regulations are having any effect. The monitoring program has not been implemented, so there's really no way for us to gauge the impact of the regulations. So what needs to happen in order to get a complete picture of the impact of dairy waste discharge on groundwater quality and then fix the problem? Obviously, the first recommendation and the most obvious one would be we need to implement and enforce the general order. But as I said, there are underlying factors that make this difficult. We need a board structure that is accountable to communities. One way in which this could happen, and it would certainly take a lot of work, but in some communities in California, they've actually organized to have the municipal water boards be elected rather than appointed. And so that would be something that certainly people have talked about with the water boards, but it would be a heavy lift. We need to invest in protecting our groundwater resources at the state level, and that means giving the board the money and staff that they need to be able to do their jobs. Due to loopholes and weaknesses in the general order, we will ultimately need stronger regulations, but it would help if we had data that could help us understand the impact of those weaknesses. And so, of course, then we need a strong monitoring program that can track pollution to the source. We've been now involved for a year and a half in a stakeholder process with the board trying to strengthen and implement this monitoring program. And our recommendations include that dairies need to be testing for not just nitrates and salts, but also for pathogens, a total coliform and fecal coliform, and that at the very least they should be reporting to the board the antibiotics and hormones that they're using so that when there's an EPA approved method for testing groundwater for those constituents, we can do it. And we know what they're using on the facilities. But finally, we need to deal with the underlying context for why dairies are so large. And this, as I mentioned, is consolidation in the industry as well as failed federal policies. The good news is this year, for the first time in history, the Department of Justice has been investigating consolidation in food and agricultural markets, and they had a hearing on consolidation in the dairy industry. We're now advocating with them to actually act on the findings. And the Farm Bill, which is going to be authorized in 2012, offers some opportunity to create policies that work better for small and mid-sized dairies and that sort of give them a fair shake in the market. So these are very long-term goals, but they're something that we're going to be focusing on considerably over the next couple years. Thank you.